With regard to the negation on or negative objects, the text goes through and comments on the point where it talks about what is cancelled or eliminated, and as mentioned in the eight notes on the eight difficult notes on the eight difficult points of Madhyamaka. So which says that so it mentions that what is cancelled, established by cancelling in the case of negation, that is not what cancels or what is called affirmed as sort of. So by this, what is known as the negatives, which are non-implicative negatives, seems not what is what cancels. The author says, I doubt whether that is the meaning here. And then some of the past called scholars of Tibet in the earlier dissemination of the Dharma, what actually cancels is necessarily cancels, or what is called cut out is necessarily affirming or positive phenomena. But in our own system, as it is said in the great commentary on Mula Madhyamaka Karika, those who assert that whatever is yongju, or all that is cut out, I mean that which is cancelled, is positive phenomena. Saying so, it shows that they are, I mean, they say so without understanding what that means. And so with regard to something, when you say this is not this phenomena, and so what is not that phenomena, and what can be eliminated or from that phenomena as being existent on that phenomena are all same in all phenomena, all objects of knowledge. So something being non-existent on that phenomena, and what is not that phenomena, are all objects of phenomena. And therefore, it is asserted that everything, as long as something is existent, that is cut, something that is cut out or cut in, and that which is cancelled. And then there is a question raised. And so what is meant by nam jie, which means that which is cancelled or eliminated, it, could either mean the authors, according to the author, it means that it could either mean that what is to be negated is actually cancelled by the valid cognition, and then, or it could mean that the cancellation of that object to be negated is ascertained by the valid cognition. So if that is the case, then with regard to non-implicating negative phenomena, both Namjie and Yongjie, that which is cancelled and that which cancels, would mean the same, would have to be explained as the same, mean as of same meaning. Because when you cancel the inherent existence on something, and what you actually gain from there is, or what you actually come to cut out from there is cut in is the non-inherent existence. So these have to do with the negative phenomena within the dhammaka or the epistemological tradition, what is known as negative phenomena, and especially when you talk about two things which are mutually exclusive with each other. So when you, in other words, when you realize the lack of inherent existence in something, what happens there is, on the one hand, that cognition realizing the lack of inherent existence in things negates the inherent existence from whatever you are realizing as being non-inherently existent, and at the same time, it realizes the lack of the inherent existence of that phenomena as well. And so in the great commentary on the Mulema Dhammaka Karika, Tsongkhapa says that the valid cognition which cancels, when the valid cognition cancels out the inherent existence of something, that canceling out of the object of negation, what is to be negated, and regarding that, so the valid cognition ascertains it, and therefore, it cuts that in or carve that in as its object, which it realizes. So whether this is the meaning that I have given above with regard to the quotation or not, should be analyzed, says. And then it says that whether or not the meaning of these terms, cancelling out or cancelling in, I mean that which is cancelled, are as I have defined or explained or not, whether this is true or not, should be analyzed. And mentions that some of the scholars of the earlier dissemination of Buddhism in Tibet wishing to establish the reality which is that nothing is established at all. They say that in the realization of emptiness, one cancels out what exists, and therefore one does not carve in the what is not an existent. And so according to them, so what they say is that when with regard to the emptiness or the realization of emptiness, you exclude the object, when you exclude what is cancelled out, then there's nothing to be established. And therefore, you cannot hold on to position that whether things are either permanent or impermanent, and called single or multiple, and so forth. You cannot posit such things. And therefore, it says existence or non-existence, whether something is or is not, and so forth. With regard to these things, there's nothing that you can actually do any kind of investigation into. And therefore, however much you may cancel out in your logical argument, there's nothing to be ascertained in the end at all. And therefore, since you cannot ascertain anything by having cancelled out the things, and you would be left only with doubt. However, in the text, it says that therefore, with regard to a phenomena, they would have to say that only doubt would be left behind. We would be left with only doubt, because there is nothing that you can talk about using the principle of mutual exclusion, whereby a third and called fourth possibility is not possible. And in the Mulamadimaka Karika, it says, what exists as inherently exists, and what exists inherently, that now that is not non-existent and therefore permanent. And with regard to these lines, the great commentary says, what is asserted or what is said to be existent inherently, that cannot be refuted in terms with regards to something that exists inherently, and therefore the inherentness cannot be refuted, as And therefore, nothing is non-existent and whatever. And therefore, those who assert that things have some inherent existence, what they accept or assert in the end is that that this kind of view is a view of the extreme of permanence, and not a view where you accept on mere existence of things. And so those two lines have to be understood in this way. What was in the past, and then it continues with the two lines from Mulamadamika Karika. What was past does not exist. If you're saying this, if you say this, then and you would fall, and you would have the consequence of logical consequence of having to say that. You would have the logical consequence of falling into the nihilistic view. And regarding this, again, there is a commentary, the great commentary. The meaning of this in the great commentary is so an entity, having said that, having asserted that an entity that existed in the past has an inherent existence or is established inherently, and then having asserted that, the present, referring to what comes later, the present, meaning that what ceases in the future, in the next moment, it does not exist. So someone who asserts this, so would have the consequence of falling into the nihilistic view. And so this is not the case that one says, not the same as saying what was there called in the past has ceased now. So what was there in the first moment has ceased now. I mean, not just saying that much. So the reason why such a person falls into the nihilistic view is, regarding that, it is said in the great commentary, so in the great commentary it says that having accepted that there is something that inherently existent entity that ceases to exist, so having asserted that, then later saying that it does not exist, would be tantamount to falling into this nihilistic view of denial. Because if things were to have any inherent existence, that it, they, then they have to exist forever. And whereas you are saying that it does not exist because it has ceased. And in the Prasanapada, it says, therefore, the meaning of inherent existence is is not the meaning of emptiness. So saying this, by saying this, one definitely abandons emptiness. And so those who are challenged in the Prasanapada are the Vaibhashikas and Sutantikas, who assert that if things were to be empty of inherent existence, then the 16 characteristics of the Four Noble Truths, out of the 16 characteristics of the Four Noble Truths, emptiness. They say that emptiness is not the one of those characteristics of the Four Noble Truths. And therefore, they denigrate this assertion or teaching. And they abandon or forsake the teachings of the sutras of the perfection of wisdom. And then the Jatamatras say that those sutras which teach the emptiness of inherent existence are not to be taken literally. So, therefore, they say that what is inherent, what is said to be inherently existent, so the inherent absence or the emptiness of inherent existence is not emptiness itself or the suchness, the reality as it is. In the 24th chapter, regarding the 24th chapter of Mula Madhyamaka Karika, Prasanapada commentary says, those yogis who were developed or born merely from the ignorance of not understanding, ignorance of the truth of conventional phenomena, regarding that phrase and so forth, regarding that the passage. So the yogis who do not know the phenomena of conventional phenomena, or who are ignorant about them,
so
So merely because of this inherent ignorance which holds or apprehends the which grasps at true existence, because of this there is the appearance of true existence. And therefore, having realized that they do not have such inherent existence, so having realized that the emptiness of that conventional reality, those who realize it to be the characteristic of the ultimate, do not fall into the two extremes. For example, regarding the certain phenomena like a seed, when it ceases at the time of the sprout and becomes inexistent, non-existent, so if that were the case, then so what would be there which exists inherently at the time of the seed itself? So since the seed itself at the time of being the seed itself does not is not observed as being inherently inherently existent entity, and therefore later on it's not conceived as being non-existent when it's inherent when it inherently an inherent existence ceases. And therefore, it does not tantamount to be a nihilistic view. So this is shown by this line which says what is in the past does not exist now. And so it shows how one is not fallen in the extreme of the nihilism. And then with regards to the abandonment of another abandonment of the of nihilistic view. In the Prasanapada, it says Since we do not harm what is accepted in the world as being, I mean, the conventions of the world, which are like a reflection of in a mirror, karma and the fruit of karma and dharma and non-dharma. We do not harm them as well. So this shows the abandonment of the other nihilistic view. So with regard to the erroneous cognitions, it is said that His Holiness was making comment on that. In the case of sentient beings, apart from those who are on the Arya path, which is absorbed totally in emptiness, also the cognitions of the Buddhas, apart from these two, any cognition within a sentient being is all necessarily erroneous or mistaken. Then, with regard to refuting or abandoning the extreme of permanence, Prasannapada also says, and so in the sense of the ultimate, it is not the case that we are, with regard to certain entities, that we are exaggerating or superimposing things on them and so forth. So as it was explained earlier about how one is not fallen, the Madhyamic is not fallen in the two extremes. Here, in the same vein, it shows that the Madhyamakas are not. It shows how the Madhyamakas are not fallen in the permanence or nihilistic view or nihilistic extreme of nihilism and or permanence in sequentially. And as a proof or evidence that Madhyamakas are not the same as those who have who assert a nihilistic view, the Prasannapada gives three scriptural quotations. And of these three, it says the first one is easy to understand. So those who hold on to the nihilistic views,
and
I mean, they, first of all, they hold on to the view that things which are seen in the world, the entities which are seen, they say that they do have inherent existence, and so hold on to that view. And then, because they do not see beings having passed from the past life, having passed from the previous life, come into this life, and then passing from this life, go into the next life, because they do not see these things their direct perception. And so using this as the reason, you should understand that they denigrate the past and future past and future of the entities. So regarding the first quotation, although it shows the what kind of assertions the opponents make, and also what kind of reasons they use are shown. The others say this. So even though the reasons may be different, but then it should not necessarily that the positions or the assertions from there should be this should be different at all. Because both the Madhyamakas and the Lokayatas are same in that both hold on to the view that things such as karma and cause and effect and so forth do not have any inherent existence. And so, therefore, they hold the same view from that point of view. If you think like that, it says that's not the same. The Madhyamakas, regarding the former, the Madhyamakas hold that the cause and effect, etc., do not have any inherent existence, whereas the later, the Lokayatas say that the cause and effect do not exist at all. That is what they hold on to. And that is so because the Madhyamakas and assert that the cause and effect or law of causality, etc., do exist in convention, whereas the Lokayatas do not accept that. So Lokayatas do not accept them to be conventionally existent. And there's every reason to prove these two. And so the meaning of this is the meaning of the second quotation, a scriptural quotation. And then the author says that regarding this term talk, or whether the talk should be the one with the post suffix letters sa or ta, has to be analyzed or investigated. But the meaning here should be the, that it is the view which is the view of a non-inherent existence. It should be understood in that way. And then the, regarding the meaning of the third scripture, so it says that both the Madhyamakas and the Lokayatas accept that karma, the law of karma, etc., do not exist inherently, or that just as they say, the entities and the meaning or the objects, in reality also, they do not. They are not established as having any inherent existence, and therefore, from that point of view too, they are. They have the same view. So if you think that, if you think in that way, then it says. Although it may be the case that what when that as they say that things do not have any inherent existence, it is it may be true that things do not have, exist inherently. Yet, they are not. They do not have the same view because of. The ones who realize apprehend it are different, and therefore they are not the same. For example, when when someone says to someone else who has stolen some treasure, even though the first person has not known that the second one has stolen something, but says, because the person doesn't like the other one, and wants to punish that other one, he called the states that this person has stolen. And on the other hand, if another person, regarding another person, a third person says, when a third person says that by actually seeing the thief to be stealing something, to of stealing something, say that or make the statement, this person has stolen, although in reality, the thief has stolen the from another person, and therefore you would have to say that these two persons who accused the third one because what they whom the person they accused of stealing actually has stolen. Although the thief has actually stolen, but then because of the attitude of the two persons who accused that one is different. One is actually lying, whereas the other is telling the truth, and therefore there is a difference which is feasible. And it's right to that there is a difference between these two persons. And so, likewise, the Madhyamakas saying that things do not have any inherent existence by understanding it and having internalized that fact. And the Lokayatas, Lokayata saying that things do not have any inherent existence are completely different. There is a big difference between these two persons. So the Lokayatas viewing or the expressing that things have no inherent existence is different, so they are not same. Then, the text goes on to say that regarding the in the commentary on the 400 verses, there is this line which says. But even then, the regarding certain meaning or object, and so although this line is from the commentary itself, some people mistake it to be the word, a line from the root text itself. So some people think that the words, but then also is the word of the root text in order to make up for the complete sentence that is added. So in order to make up this line, some people seem to have mistaken it for the line from the root text, the 400 verses, because in the commentary it says, when it uses the example or the analogy, the commentary says that in that case, the regarding certain meaning or object, and therefore the term, even though is not found in the commentary.
Ooh.
And regarding the part in Hakdon Chemo which mentions, which says, the different criticisms will not work against us, will not outdo our position. So his Holiness says he has finished 45 pages. So perhaps day after tomorrow, during the morning session, I may be able to finish this text. And day after tomorrow, I think I would do the ceremony for Bodhicitta as Jerembuche in Lamrim Chemo. It goes through the practice of taking the aspirational Bodhicitta using Bodhisattva Bhumi. And then when it comes to taking the actual Bodhisattva vows, refers to his own commentary on the morality chapter of the Bodhisattva Bhumi. So regarding this practice of taking the Bodhisattva vow, based on that text that Jerembuche referred to, there seems to be that tradition seems to have declined for some time, and therefore, with the wish to revive that tradition, generally speaking, the Pratimoksha vows and the Tantric vows are taken. I mean, they have to be taken from one's lama. And therefore, I suggested to my senior tutor, Chapje Ling Rinpoche, to take the vow of Bodhicitta based on Master Tsongkhapa's Bodhisattva Bhumi's morality chapter, and then from him that I would take. And so Ling Rinpoche did that, and then I took the Bodhisattva vow from him, and Segun Tsenshe Rinpoche also was with me at the time. So that was a very auspicious time. Fortunate, I felt, and I also felt very glad as well as sad, and cried. And so day after tomorrow morning, we'll do the aspirational bodhicitta ceremony as well as bodhisattva vows, taking the bodhisattva vow based on the Changjub Shunglam, the commentary on the morality chapter by Master Tsongkhapa on the morality chapter of Bodhisattva Bhumi. In the liberation in the palm, with regard to the preliminary practices for Bodhicitta, there is extensive. So we'll not do that. But the most important thing is your motivation. As we have gone through the training of the mind for Bodhicitta, which is taught in great length, and therefore have some strong feeling of bodhicitta motivation, and then you should, with that kind of feeling, you should take part in the ceremony for aspirational bodhicitta and bodhisattva vows. So regarding the rite for these two, it's very easy to find and to follow in this commentary on the morality chapter of Bodhisattva Bhumi called the Changjub Shunglam. the highway of the enlightenment. So we just jumping to where His Holiness has just begun and resumed. So first it says in the Sandin Nimocana Sutra, in the Sandin Nimocana Sutra, objects to the literal meaning or what is taught literally in the Panchaparamita Sutras. And so for the perfection of wisdom sutras, such as so regarding that perfection of wisdom sutra, it says the 100,000 verses of Panchaparamita Sutra, a part of it it includes certain sections where the application of the refutation of ultimate existence is mentioned implicitly. Where it is shown that the refutation or the the object to be negated is applied and is said to be implied implicitly. And therefore, this what is explicitly said in the literally cannot be taken literally. But what by these terms, what is actually what one we should establish or assert is that things do not have any the things do not have intrinsic arising. In certain textbooks of the monasteries, it is also mentioned that the arising and cessation are the literal meaning of the arising and cessation in the ultimate sense do not exist is the literal meaning. So according to that kind of interpretation, it says in the lamp of light of Madhyamaka or illumination of Madhyamaka, it says therefore interpreting the interpreting or showing or demonstrating the intention all regarding that also we should not contradict that to be the definitive meaning as And therefore, the lack of or the absence of arising and so forth, which are shown in it, could be established or to be of definitive meaning. And seeing and so forth. And they, we can resolve the contradiction with the seeing and so forth. And also, in order to eliminate conceiving these to be conceiving these to be taken literally, and so with these statements, so Sandi Nimocana Sutra in the Sandi Nimocana Sutra so if you take, it says that if you take what is said in certain sutras that that is that all phenomena do not arise or do not have any identity. Or arising and so forth. So if these are taken literally, as the words, the, according to the wordings of the sutras, then it contradicts the actual empirical experience. And therefore, the literal mean taking this is literally is refuted. And therefore, it is established as definitive meaning. And in the so the speech of true eloquence, it says, so the intention or the meaning or the purpose of these statements, such as that things do not have any identity, are commented or interpreted by the Sandi Nimocana Sutra. And this is said to be the meaning here is that it refutes the other sutras to be taken literally, and therefore establishes the definitive meaning. So so if we take these to be true, then it isn't it called what is said in the Lekshin Yingpo or the speech of true eloquence, is it not right to, I mean, it uses certain consequences, saying, is it not right to say that?
Mm-hmm.
So the author mentions that the decisive argument or analysis of commentary of Prajaparamita by Master Jayanshepa, where it says that, according to that, in the system of the Savatantrika Madhyamakas, the usage of the qualification ultimate applying this qualification implicitly those sutras which apply it implicitly regarding them, their wording, although cannot be taken literally, but then what they actually show or teach can be taken literally. So what they show the literally can be taken cannot be taken literally. So taking these statements to be literal, literally, it says in the system of Kamala Shila, when we find this statement in the 100,000 sutras, which says it is in the convention of the world, but not in the ultimate sense. So according to Kamala Shila's system, this is the actual form of applying the qualification ultimate to the object that that is to be negated, and and then in another statement where it says the compounding of the form is not seen in reality. And so regarding this statement, so the qualification ultimate is applied implicitly. So regarding these two, one explicit and the other implicitly applied, regarding the qualification ultimate. Although there is a difference in when you say that regarding the wording itself, it can be taken literally or not, they both are the definitive teachings. So what is the actual content of that is actually support something that is cognized by valid cognition. And from the point of view of the ultimate existence, it actually qualifies both. So to say that maybe is if we hold on to that kind of position, saying that these are actually regarding the actual content or the subject matter, it is that with which is validly cognized, and also that it is taught from the point of view of the ultimate. In the text, it's also then goes through. Because the Chidamatras do not assert that there are particles which are indivisible without any parts, and also external phenomena which are the collection of those partless particles. So since the Chittamatas do not accept these, and both the infinitesimal particles individually as well as and by themselves are not the objective condition of consciousness and visual consciousness, because they do not appear in to the visual consciousness. And then the collection of these infinitesimal particles are not the objective condition of visual consciousness, because they do not exist substantially. So to these arguments of Chittamatrans, in the Bhava Viveka's Tarka Jvala, Blades of Reasoning, says, so if you say that these subtle particles, when before gathered, if you say that before gathering together or coming together, that these subtle particles are not the objective objective condition of the visual consciousness, then it is something that we have already realized, and you are trying to prove something we already know. So this is what is said by Bhava Viveka. And then to the second position, Bhava Viveka says in response, regarding these particles, if you are talking about particles which are of the same category or same kind coming to which are collected together, etc. And so the meaning is, so the particles which are concordant with each other, which have come together or which have formed a mass, and therefore, in terms of special entity, the Bhava Viveka says that they are using this as the object to be analyzed, to be considered. Then, if you say that, then, and that in, that also is not the objective existence, objective condition, or objective cause or the condition of the visual perception or the sensory perception, because they do not have any substantial existence. So if you use this reasoning, Bhava Viveka is saying that because they do not have any substantial existence, therefore the collection of those particles which are of the same entity, same nature or same kind, even that is not the condition or objective condition or cause of the sensory perception, then that reasoning that you are using, that it does not have, they do not have any substantial existence, is something that is not established for the for others. Because our visual consciousness, for example, which sees some object, arises because of all these particles coming together to form a mass, and therefore that mass of object, or the collection of all these particles together, serves as a objective condition for the sensory perception to arise. And so they have some substantial existence as well, this is. Like the subtle particles themselves. So each of these particles also are made up of 8 different elements. And so there are each of these comprised of these eight particles or eight elements. And so since it is accepted to be a substantial substantially existent, therefore the collection of them also, like the like a vase, also is established substantially. So the fire particle and so forth cannot be a standalone element without being comprising the eight different elements. So if we could explain these in this way, the author says that perhaps we could do it, like interpret it like that, but do further investigation. So in the text it says that this school of thought asserts that partless particles are asserted to be the objective condition. So regarding this, regarding the meaning of this, in the written by a text on the philosophical system written by Chankya Rabe Dorje, however much we may critically analyze this, we may not assert that they are asserting something which is utterly without any parts at all. So when the term tarab or this is about the term tarab, dul tarab, or the subtlest particle. When this term is used, it doesn't mean that the particle themselves do not have any parts at all. But what it means is when you use your critical mind. I mean, without using the critical mind, the sensory perceptions cannot go to the depth of the particles and parts of the particles, and so what they cannot perceive, to the extent that they cannot perceive the subtle, more subtler particles, then we term those particles to be the subtlest particles. So if we can interpret it like this, perhaps it is okay, but then still, Chankya Rabe Dorje goes on to say you should analyze it further. So according to some scholars, they say that the Bhava Viveka Bhava Viveka does accept that the particles have their parts. the subtlest particles have their parts, because of making these distinctions of the that it has its aspect of being an object and also being a part of being an aspect of being an entity and so forth. And so there are many parts to these particles. But when it comes to special extension of the particles, there's nothing more to be divided up into its parts in terms of special extension. And therefore, this term chame is used. The chame or the partless is used. And then there is a calm race. In that case, even the Bhashikas and Sotantikas do assert that the particles have their parts in terms of being object or being as in terms of being or having the aspect of being a matter and so forth. And therefore, would they also assert that these particles, the subtlest particles, are with parts? So there would be this kind of absurd consequence if you say what you have said earlier. But if these subtlest particles cannot be divided up into more parts, then you would be positing what is actually set up as the opponent of this called Vasubandhu's argument, where he says when one particle is surrounded by six particles and so forth. So you would be the one whom Vasubandhu was challenging, and therefore you would have to. There is this absurd consequence that you should accept, that you accept or assert that things do not have any parts. Then the text goes on to say that in the a dose of emptiness by Kedubje, maybe, if you were to assert an entity which is without its parts, which is without a part, then in both the cases of the Madhyamakas, Prasangikas, as well as the Savatantrikas, both these schools assert that if you say that there is a partless entity, then you also would have to accept that things have some true existence as well. And then in the commentary on Kalachakra, it is said whether in the higher or lower systems of tenets, either of these systems, the lower or the higher systems of tenets, as long as you assert that there is a partless entity, you would have to accept that they also are entities which are truly existent as well. And so this is a great deal to be analyzed. So His Holiness finished 55 pages. Geshe-la Changju Sangye from Shaanxi College, who is a great teacher in Shaanxi College of Garden Monastic University, will be leading the review session with the help of Venerable Tenzin Namdak, who is a Western monk studying at Sera Je Monastic College. And so everyone is invited, and please take part, as many as people as possible. If you could come to the review session, it would be good. This review session is being held at the suggestion and advice of His Holiness the Dalai Lama. So we have two great scholars. One is Geshe Changju Sangye, who is a philosophy teacher in Garden Shaanxi Monastery in Mungot, and in the last few years, or about 5 or 6 years, he has been working on the books on Buddhist science and Buddhist philosophy, along with three other scholars from Sera Garden Drepung Monastic Universities, who have been involved in this project at the behest of His Holiness the Dalai Lama himself for the last 6 years or so. And so please come to the review session. We'll have a 15-minute break, and when we'll start. We'll start around 10 to 3 o'clock after 15 minutes, this review session. And Venerable Namdak will be serving as the interpreter for Geshe Changju Sangye at this review session. And for those who are interested, who speak other languages, you, if you understand English, you may also join. But we'll try to set up the translation on the radio for those who listen to other languages, if it's possible for us to do so. The English translation will be consecutive translation and interpretation, not direct, called not simultaneous. And so those who would be translating from English or could do it on the radio. So please come. So 15 minutes after 15 minutes. After this prayer, maybe it'll be about 3 o'clock, or a little before that, or a little after that, but we will definitely start 15 minutes after this session. Therefore, everyone is requested or welcome to the review session.
visited.
From my two collections, vast space that I've amassed from working with effort at this practice for a great length of time, may I become the chief leading Buddha for all those whose mind's wisdom eye is blinded by ignorance. Even if I do not reach this state, may I be held in your loving compassion for all lives, Manjushri. May I find the best of complete graded parts of the teachings, and may I please all the Buddhas by my practice. Using skillful means drawn by the strong force of compassion, may I clear the darkness from the minds of all beings. With the points of the path as I have discerned them, may I have hold Buddha's teaching for a very long time, with my heart going out with great compassion. In whatever direction the most precious teachings have not yet spread, or once spread have declined, may I reveal this treasure of happiness and aid. May the minds of those whose wish for liberation be granted bounteous peace, and the Buddha's deeds be nourished for a long time by even this graded path of enlightenment completed due to the wondrous virtuous conduct of the Buddhas and their children. May all human and non-human beings who eliminate adversity and create conducive conditions for practicing the excellent path never be parted in any of their lives from the purest path praised by the Buddhas. Whenever someone makes effort to act in accordance with the tenfold Mahayana virtuous practices, may he always be assisted by the mighty ones, and may oceans of prosperity spread everywhere. Namo Inge Yilo Eteji Yave Zebari Lokyo Yuchi Namo Sande
the prayer of the words of truth. Magnificent masters of an ocean of divinest good qualities, those going to bliss of the three times, your children, disciples, looking upon destitute migrators like your only child, please pay attention to my true words of sorrow.
expand the doctrine of completely perfect capable one which removes the sufferings of cyclical existence and solitary peace for abandoning extensive welfare and happiness in Jambudvipa by increase the 10 kinds of karma conduct of all those learned and accomplished holders of the doctrine by pacifying all the unbearable dangers of sickness, weapons, famine, cause those migrators totally compelled by intolerable strong karma, stricken by the torture of sufferings without respite to recover their breath in an ocean of to be relieved in an ocean of happiness and joy, particularly for all migratory beings in the religious snowland, oppressed by evil actions by the barbarian hordes from the black side, devoid of love. May your power of compassion arise and quickly stop the flow of blood and tears. May all the unruly groups of people maddened by the demon of afflictive emotions, who by their own right behavior ruin themselves and others, fully obtain the eye which sees the object of compassion and obtain magnificent love, kindness, and affection, the wish that has long dwelt in my heart and is glorious. The complete freedom is glorious, complete freedom of the land of Tibet. And Thailand will bestow soon the fortune to enjoy that celebration of spontaneous religious and secular harmony. In short, may the good fruit of an extensive prayer to fully protect the land of snow made by the powerful protector Chandrasekhar in the presence of the Buddhas and their children appear soon, here and now. The operation of evil thoughts and deeds of men, forces of humans and non-humans who harbor malice through their perverted prayers against the teaching of the victorious one.